welcome to another podcast of Tech San Diego Spotlight. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. My name is Kevin Carroll. I'm the executive director of Tech San Diego, operating in technology's perfect climate. And we're finally getting to some good weather, which is nice. We've had a lot of May gray, although it's just May. But this is one. Let me give you a little bit of context for this. So we had, first, let me introduce Jordi Pujol. Jordi, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
We'll get to who he is and what he does. Jordi heads the Valuation Advisory Services Practice for Objective Capital, one of Tech San Diego's friends. He serves as the engagement leader for the firm's Valuation Advisory Services Practice. He has over 10 years experience of financial modeling experience, has worked on a vast number of financial reporting engagements, tax options, and tangible asset valuations, which we're going to get back to that. His focus includes purchase price allocations, business valuations, goodwill impairment testing, 409A, and other employee compensation related valuations, valuations of IP and other intangible assets, as well as investment holding valuations. But Jordi had visited our CEO roundtable, and the topic was valuation, a little bit of a PowerPoint presentation, but mostly just an interactive discussion. And it was fascinating. Some of the what they were talking about was really, at least to my ear, sounded like they weren't hearing enough of this good advice and guidance. And I caught myself saying, geez, I need to make sure that more people hear this besides just the CEO roundtable. So I grabbed Jordi. I said, Jordi, jump on Tech San Diego Spotlight and let's go after this. So Jordi, again, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Yeah, it was definitely an exciting conversation. What I like to talk about is always complex financial topics in a much more simple manner and make sure that the obvious yet not so obvious strategies for value creation are integrated into companies, especially in sectors like the technology sector.
Well, it's interesting. And I think sometimes executives, they think they're focusing on creating value. But I think when you dig in a little bit, you really question what they're doing. And all this stuff, I know Objective Capital is an M&A firm. You lead a valuation practice. But certainly, you know, these things seem to be should be focused on before you're even close to an M&A, right? So obviously you can maximize that kind of value. So how, when you go into, let's say, audit a company on a value measurement, what type of things are you looking for?
So a lot of the time, the first thing that I'm looking for is, do they have organized financials? Do they have organized financial information that can be used for decision-making? And if they do, they're already ahead of 50% of the companies. And then the second is, do they look ahead? So are they forward thinking? Are they doing budgets? And are they doing financial forecasts? Because if they have a blueprint for growth and for value creation, again, they're already ahead of 90% of the companies.
So when you're going into a company, what do you identify as the kind of the key drivers of value creation? I know you just talked about some of them. And I think secondarily, like, how do you go in and advise them to prioritize how they're spending their time and money?
Absolutely. So the first question I always ask is, tell me about your technology. Companies will over talk about their technology, but what I'm really interested in is talking about their customers. So I obviously have that technology discussion. Tell me about what you're innovating on. Tell me about your product. And let's very quickly move into talking about your customers. And why customers? Well, customers are the life force of every single company. And if you have a good process to onboard customers, to retain customers, to find new customers, again, you're putting yourself in a position for success. So that's the first question that I ask. Let's talk about customer acquisition costs. Let's talk about retention and what you're doing with your customers. And let's talk about your sales team. How are they going to market? What are they focusing on?
You know, it's fun, not funny, funny, not funny, Jordi, that, you know, you didn't talk about technology. And I think that's the trap where a lot of them fall in, right? Is that they want to, you know, all of our value is in our technology, right? And you and I both know that's not the case. So do you end up walking people off that? It's not a tightrope, but it's probably the edge. Do you end up kind of walking them through? Great, technology is great, but you know, 5 years, 3 to 5 years down the line, you want to package this up for a merger and acquisition. That's not what your suitor is going to be asking for.
100%, right? And the thing that I always want to make sure that they do is that they can explain their technology in about 30 seconds, right? The comparisons to, oh, I'm the Uber of X. Sure, they're fun. But truly, what do you do? So for example, if you're a company that provides inventory management software for AM PM stores, gas stations, and 7-Elevens, tell me that, right? I'm sure you have a ton of features and a ton of technology, but what do you actually do? What is your core market and what do you focus on? And if you can explain that in about 10, 20 seconds, one sentence, again, you're doing it in a way where you're showing that you have focus and you're showing that you have a way to convince people that you have great technology through very simple wording.
Do you see a delta between when you go into a company and you start to advise and counsel them and you're looking for their, okay, what's your strategic plan, right? And most companies have that. Do you see that? Do you ask for past strategic plans? I guess the question I'm asking for is there, do you see matchups between the strategic plan and execution? I mean, how far, those would seem to be sometimes far apart. They say, oh yeah, we got a strategic plan to bring out a 20-page guide, but then you start digging and you start asking about the execution on that. Is that something that you see a lot of?
That's a fantastic question. And it's a great question because people tend to have great strategy and change it every 3 months, right? They start chasing those shiny objects, but they don't realize that those multiple shifts confuse employees, make it very difficult to have long-term planning, and don't allow you to go after what you truly care about, right? So if you've taken the time to understand what drives value in your company, and you set a strategy for the next, at a minimum 12 months, maybe even 24 to 36 months, you'll have a roadmap that is guiding you with a vision. And if you're, again, able to communicate that to everybody in the company, it's much more likely that you're aligning forces and that everybody's marching towards the same goal. Obviously, I'll give you the counter example in finance, right? When you ask someone like, well, did you meet your budget? And they're like, oh, we only missed it by 5%. It's like, oh, wow, that sounds fantastic. But then you realize that they changed the budget 17 times during the quarter, right? So the same thing with strategy, right? If you're changing your strategy every 3 months, you might be on track, but it turns out that you've only been on track for a couple of weeks.
You know, that's a very good tip. I'm going to use that to my board next time I'm presenting financials. I'll just change the budget, and
exactly.
And we'll be good. So you see a lot of companies, right? And so what's the one or two things that you really want to go in and take the chief executives off and really shake them up, and that's really frustrating, and that you might receive some pushback on? What are there commonalities to a lot of companies that you see? So why are you doing this?
So when I talk to CEOs, I always try to focus them on what is your true job, right? And the true job of a CEO is to set strategy, to drive operational excellence, and to manage risk. And those three things are always important, but they carry much more importance at different stages of a company. So if you're in that very early stage where you're really a salesman as the CEO, a visionary, well, focus on setting that strategy, right? Think about your products, think about your target customers, maybe even a very small niche of customers, and really focus on driving that strategy. If you're a little bit more mature, okay, so this is a time to focus on operational excellence, right? As a CEO, your COO is probably your best friend at this stage. And your CFO is your other best friend as you set your financial strategy, as you borrow, as you think about treasury management and cash flow management. So that is going to be your primary focus as a mid-stage CEO. And finally, if you're in those latest stages, pre-exit, thinking about a potential M&A event, maybe even moving towards an IPO or thinking about moving towards an IPO, then your job as a CEO is to manage risk. What does that entail? Everything from data privacy to managing the risk of customer retention. So again, it's all kind of similar, but it's slightly shifted towards a different stage of that company. And again, as a CEO, even though your job is all those three things always, you're shifting your focus into what's most important.
Jordy, how do you talk about going after shiny things, right? And those shiny things often have an impact on valuation. And, you know, the current one is AI, right? And so every company now has, whether they do or not, will force some type of AI component overlay on what they do. Sometimes what's the more important determinant of value? Is it sometimes market forces, like the next big thing, or is it really company specific actions?
So I think there has to be a balance here, right? I love AI. I love what we're going to be able to do with machine learning and robotics and large language models, large action models. But it's not enough to just say, hey, I have a company and have AI, right? That can be good for investors. That can be good as an additional point of value in your presentations. But you have to go down to the core, and you have to come down to the reality of what is the problem that you're solving, right? Is this a big enough pain point for companies that you're going to be important in their own operations? And if the answer is yes, then great. And if you can do it in a scalable manner and you're using AI to do so, even better, right? So when I think about AI, I think, how is the company internally using it to scale? And how is that company externally using it to market? We're just in that moment in time where, if you attach AI to your company and you're doing a good job of using it, automatically enhance value. You are automatically enhancing value for your company. So I love the trend. I think there's a lot of potential, but I think you have to go beyond the words and truly think about how it's enhancing your ability to scale and to cut costs.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a delta between some companies that are, you know, slapping on for investors versus, I think, what you talk about, and I love how you always come back to the same thing. How do you truly create value, right? So do you mostly represent companies that are, you know, in a beginning stage or positioning or just want to increase their valuation? Do you ever work on the other side of acquiring companies and going in and looking at value sets for companies?
So we've absolutely been on the other side of the coin. A lot of the time we're working with corporate development teams that just want an independent opinion of value of a company. And for example, I worked with a company that was looking to acquire a reagent and assay maker. For those of you that don't know, it's essentially kind of a core element of lab work and of biotechnology. And the interesting thing about this company is that the acquirer was known for operational excellence and for coming into companies and making them even better. But it turned out that this particular target was already fantastic at that. So it was a great way to merge two companies with very similar focuses and very similar culture. But unfortunately, it was not going to be a great acquisition target, because they weren't going to be able to do their traditional playbook model, which was enhancing operational excellence and expanding margin. So we ran different scenarios, and it was very clear that if you're able to expand margin by, let's call it 4 or 5%, which was pretty much the maximum that you really could, you weren't going to get away with the purchase price that they were asking for. So that was an interesting way of helping a company use a valuation model to make an important decision in their acquisition strategy.
Yeah, and it goes back to how does the fit work and what do they value, right? When you talk to CEOs, what do you think they're spending time on that they probably shouldn't be?
Well, the first one's meetings. That's the most obvious one in any company, right? If you're a company where the CEO is in meetings 100% of the time, then when is he doing his thinking, right? At the same time, I get it, right? The CEOs need to have a light touch in a lot of things, but they should have, you know, still those deep work sessions where they're focusing on one very key strategic item and then letting their people go ahead and run it. Typically, they say that there's kind of these frontiers of innovation, especially in technology companies, where CEOs need to be on their H3 frontier. And what that means is they need to be on the thing that's going to be great in 5 years, right? So have you already gotten to a great point in your H1 frontier, right, in your current technology? Great. Leave that to the kind of like middle managers and lower kind of level engineers. Next, you start thinking in your H2 frontier, what are the adjacencies to that technology, and start focusing your upper level management in those areas once you've, again, set the strategy. But most of your time, let's call it 70% of your time, 60, 70% of your time, should be on that H3 frontier, which is what's going to keep your company going into the future.
That's tough, Jordy. That's, you know, there's so many fires to put out, right? I guess it depends on the strength of the COO and your other key management team. But asking a CEO to do that, it may be the right thing to do, but that seems like a really tough ask.
Extremely difficult. And it might not be your strategy. You're absolutely right. You know, you might be a CEO that's really more of a COO, right? So if you're better in that position, then hire someone who's a visionary, right? That's completely fine. If you want to be a leader that has not a light touch, but a hard touch on everything in the company, then become your CEO, become your own COO and focus on operations and focus on that operational excellence, because that's extremely valuable. If you can't find that person, you need to fulfill that role. And again, if you're a true CEO, you might find that person who can fulfill it, right? As a true operational guru. But if you're not and you want to be that role, then take it on, right? I think it's fine. I think sometimes we get kind of attached to a certain moniker, and CEO sounds like I should be making all the decisions. But in reality, again, that's not the ideal place for a CEO. You should be the person that ends bottlenecks, that makes tough decisions, that asks people to be better analyzing a situation. But again, you don't want to be the operator.
So I think that most companies are, and by the way, I mean, Objective Capital has really done a really good job at least preparing the CEOs in our network. When you get that inquiry from a larger company, I guess I'll say it like, you know, when to ignore them and when to take them seriously. And there's been a couple of talks on that. But let's say you have a suitor that's serious, and you're having a first meeting with your CEO. Just top three things you're going to, without digging into the company, what are the top three things that you're going to talk about the CEO to make sure they're maximizing value? I think you talked a little bit about the financials, but again, without digging into my company, say, you better have this in order, you better have this in order, and we need to start looking at this. What are those 3 to 5 things, or 2 things, or 1 thing?
So in a transaction setting, I think maybe you were guiding it towards a transaction setting, so I'll go there. Between CEOs, I think the points of discussion have to be, one, culture. So are the companies culturally a good fit? That's very soft in nature and at the same time, extremely important. One of the biggest issues that people have fulfilling synergies is their ability to integrate teams. And people are the most important resource in pretty much every company. Sure, some are automated and the technology is fantastic, but a lot of the time you still need the engineers to get along. So when companies are having that discussion, culture should be at the top of the list, even though it rarely is. So that's number one. Number two is going to be the ability to integrate the technologies, right? So can we integrate people first, and then can we integrate the technologies? If there are technologies that are completely separate, it's gonna be difficult for your technical folks to sell it. It's going to be difficult to integrate across customers. It's going to be difficult to cross-sell. There are going to be a lot of difficulties in the stacks if they don't communicate with each other and they're not truly value enhancing in that peripheral sense, right? Sometimes, yes, sure, you need technologies that are completely different because there's a niche that you're missing and you need a bigger stack of features to sell into your corporates or into your SMBs or whatever your market is. But if those technologies don't integrate, don't talk to each other, can't talk to each other, you might as well be running two different companies.
You know, I know this is oversimplifying it, and this is an obvious statement. So I think what I'm hearing is that the better the fit in technology and culture, the more value it's going to bring you when you the ultimate transaction is being versus a company where it's not a good match, the valuation is going to be decreased because no one sees it, I guess.
Exactly. And when we're talking about chasing shiny objects, you know, larger corporations that are starting to feel very comfortable with their cash flows have the ability to make acquisitions, but sometimes they're just acquiring the brightest new thing. And that may not be the right strategic fit, right? I'm not saying that everybody's doing this. You know, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of companies where their corporate venture portfolio 100% focuses on companies that can either be partners, that can have a synergy in the technology, or that can be potential future acquisitions. So that's a fantastic strategy, right? You're still going into a nascent world. You're still going into that age three technology of the future world, but you still have the sense of one day I can actually integrate this. Could it go in a million directions? Absolutely. But again, you at least have that seed of there is a match here in some manner, and I'm going to be able to take advantage of that into the future, as opposed to just buying another company that I'm kind of shooting into a holding company. That's not a great strategy.
So we talked about the basics. We talked about valuation on the basics, making sure your financials and everything in order. We talked a little bit about making sure the culture is bringing value to all the parties if you're looking at a future transaction. What have we not talked about? We're coming up across 20 minutes, which most of our podcasts are 20 minutes or so. What have we not talked about that you think would really be able to guide companies in creating value?
So I think to maybe summarize the whole thing, we talked a lot about focus. So I say pick your top asset and then its sidekick and really focus on those two things. And don't overestimate technology as being your top asset. It can really be your sales force and your ability to create these long-term contracts. And then don't confuse growing for scaling. Right? Growing is adding one more person and they bring X of value. Adding a third person, they bring X of value, and a fourth person, X of value. That's not really scaling, that's growing. So sometimes it's better to invest in the areas that have higher ROI and that provide an ability to grow beyond that X, right? Grow 2X, 3X. And again, easier said than done. I completely understand that a lot of this is the obvious yet not so obvious. And you know, it's much, much easier said than done. But again, it's about having that mentality of, can I invest into a CRM system versus into another salesperson? Because if that's the case, you're going to get a lot more scale out of the system than out of that extra salesperson. So I think those are the two things that I can leave as a takeaway. But the last one being just don't forget risk management, right? A company's value is all about its future cash flows. But your acquirer or anybody else trying to invest in your firm is going to try and discount those cash flows. So if you're a company that's minimizing risk, and that can be key man risk, that can be legal exposure, that can be reporting risk, financial risk, then you're automatically enhancing value as well. So don't forget that can be another element of creating value.
Well, I think all good advice and guidance. I know we jumped right into it today, but it was a lot of information in a short amount of time. And when Jordy spoke to our CEO roundtable, these are the things he went over. And I was impressed by his ability to go through a lot of information in a short amount of time. Jordy, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how would they get a hold of you?
So for now, the best thing to do is email me at jordi.pujol. jordi.pujol@objectiveibv. That's Objective Investment Banking and Valuation.com. And reach out to me on LinkedIn. I publish a lot of articles that try to get to the same topics that we discussed today. We have several podcasts that we've been on as a firm. And we're always trying to put content out there that's educational, that's helpful, and that's entertaining for our audiences.
And we'll have this information in liner notes too. I was on your LinkedIn page today and I looked at one of your presentations. So that's good advice. I went there. Look, it seems like it's common sense. And some of it is, but some of it is you forget, right? And so, you know, I think, you know, our senior executives, at least technology senior executives, really need to hear this messaging. So, Jordy, thank you for your time today. I know you're a real busy guy. I appreciate you coming by the podcast and relaying this information on valuation. I'm sure a lot of people are going to find it helpful, and we will bring you back at some point when we have something going on that's relevant to what you're talking about.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope that everybody continues to read our articles and listen to our podcast. Thank you so much.
And thank you, and we will be back for another Spotlight. Go to techsandiego.org for more information on Tech San Diego, and we'll put more information in the liner notes as well.
Thank you for listening to Tech San Diego Spotlight Podcast. Tech San Diego is a trade association supporting the regional innovation economy. For more information on Tech San Diego, visit techsandiego.org. Thank you to our special guest, Jordy Pujol, Managing Director, Valuation at Objective. This podcast was recorded in studio and edited by Hypable Impact. Executive producer for The Spotlight is Kevin Carroll. And as always, very, very important, like, follow, and share. Thank you.